Hi, and welcome back to the show. Today, I am joined by Alex Small of Catalyst BPX. He is one of the founders and lead investor of this relatively new startup in the outsourcing space. Alex has a fantastic origin story that we spend quite a bit of time on actually in the podcast, so I won't go too deep into it. But Alex is primarily based in Silicon Valley. He has deep experience in Silicon Valley and the startup ecosystem there, working for some of the biggest names in the valley. So it's interesting that he is bringing that wealth of experience to Catalyst BPX. And like any good Silicon Valley disciple, he is looking at disrupting the BPO space. So it's a really great conversation about the opportunities for disrupting the status quo and how we can do things differently in outsourcing and ultimately to the benefit of clients and staff. So a really good conversation with Alex. As always, if you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerate.com/podcast. Enjoy. This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from offshore business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you are already outsourcing, about to start, or are somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your offshore operations. The Outsource Accelerator Marketplace now covers over 3,000 outsourcing firms, representing a global workforce of over 5 million people. We also host this leading outsourcing podcast, publish Inside Outsourcing, and have over 15,000 pages of content on the site. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Also, if you find this podcast interesting or valuable, please share it. We have now produced hundreds of episodes featuring the outsourcing world's most prominent luminaries. Please show your support by sharing this podcast today. So, Alex, we're going to talk about your outsourcing firm, Catalyst BPX. You are the founder and investor for this company. You're bringing all of the best of Silicon Valley to building this company. You currently work at Stripe in a senior position. So I'm really intrigued to explore your strategy for Catalyst and how you are, you know, just sort of reading your website, how you are reinventing the BPO industry, so, or disrupting, for a Silicon Valley phrase. So, Alex, welcome to the show. Give us the elevator pitch for Catalyst BPX, and then maybe we can go back and sort of explore your journey a bit.
Yeah, great. Happy to do so. So, Catalyst for me, it was really born from a passion of just the past few years as I worked at Zendesk, first of all, in my career in the finance track, and eventually ended up passing through the Philippines and working with a few of the folks there as part of their offshore operation. I started to realize that there was just this huge opportunity to, kind of have labor arbitrage, right? I mean, candidly, that's one of the big opportunities. Philippines is one of the things a lot of folks come to the Philippines for. And I realized that from my perception, and I believe this quite strongly, a lot of people actually underestimate what's possible in the Philippines. I think many folks look to it as a place that you can find some good talents and it's more affordable, but they don't really realize that the ROI is, as much higher as I think it can be if you hire very well in the Philippines and build the right kind of systems around the talent that's there. So as I moved on from Zendesk and went to ClickUp, I found myself being able to take on a role there that was actually building out their entire offshoring operation versus just sort of interfacing with some of the finance teams like I did at Zendesk. And I happily jumped on it, wanted to prove to myself and to ClickUp that we could build something that was better than what I'd seen built in the past. And we worked with like Accenture, other big BPO type companies at Zendesk, and even ClickUp had some interactions with companies like that. So I wanted to show that we could kind of do it better than them too, you know, have that white glove approach and be able to really focus and create something that was head and shoulders above the rest of the pack. And so I believe we did. And a lot of that comes down to, I mean, like any country where you're hiring, if you are looking for the top talent and you have access to the right networks, you have the right hiring methods, you can bring on folks that are, you know, better than your average person, right? You can get the top 10%, the top 5%, the top 1%. And what I found is with the price differentials of the Philippines, if you're finding that top 1% or so talents, I mean, typically compare that to the top 5 to 1% of talents, you know, elsewhere in the world, I mean, you're probably getting something like a 3 or 4x ROI. And I think everybody walks away happy. You know, the folks in the Philippines are getting tremendous opportunities that are kind of new to the country. Folks on the other end, the clients, the tech company, whoever it is that's using the services is usually, you know, getting a lot more bang for their buck than they might be used to from hiring in, you know, higher cost countries. And you're just, yeah, you're creating opportunities and kind of moving the world forward, helping with, you know, some of the globalization of talent and opportunities. So that's one thing that we really focus on. It's quality and it's having those connections and these leading technology companies that are employing some of that best talent. The other thing that we do is we try to innovate a little bit on the standard BPO model. So there's things like a lack of transparency, kind of like a slow, clunky process of getting a customer on board and getting, you know, them up and running with some strong talent. There's the, you know, typically more manual method of having those conversations. It's a bunch of email exchanges, have some meetings. We are, you know, working very quickly to build out a, you know, more like e-commerce method of having those transactions. It's going to give you a concierge type experience, getting through to a success manager, getting exactly what you need, and, you know, being able to go through the whole discovery and buying process with a lot more visibility, transparency, and just sort of urgency to get folks up and running quickly. So we're excited about it. We're trying to take some of our tech company learnings and some of the mentality that we've been infused with from working at great companies like Zendesk, ClickUp, Stripe, et cetera, to make the outsourcing experience better for the client and, you know, differentiate ourselves.
That's great, Alex. Really, really exciting. And I would have been a little bit disappointed if, based in Silicon Valley, you're not bringing some of that sort of Silicon Valley pizzazz into the outsourcing industry. Really exciting to see. And, you know, I believe, so anyway, let's go back to the beginning. And just to clarify, you have worked in Zendesk, you've worked in ClickUp, and, you know, you're now working in Stripe. All of these are very much Silicon Valley darlings. And so you have been based in Silicon Valley and you're very much immersed into that kind of vibe, yeah, that methodology, yep, and mentality.
That's right, yeah. And that's one of the things that we're so excited to bring to the BPO industry. We find that with most BPOs that we've tried to work with in the past or that we've researched and talked to more recently, most of them come from the BPO industry or they come from other kinds of backgrounds that are...
It's a very traditional industry, isn't it? It's very,
yeah,
kind of
brick, yeah, and very
mortar.
Traditional. And maybe a little bit more like kind of labor oriented, you know, like they come from backgrounds where they are used to managing people and hiring people, but yeah, just very traditional, not as like technology enabled, you know, to use one of the kind of buzzier terms. And so we think that there is an opportunity to like really, you know, walk the talk on that tech enablement.
Exciting. That'll be interesting to watch. First of all, I want to get your perspective on Silicon Valley. I believe there hasn't really been wide adoption of offshoring. As you say, you know, there's a huge opportunity for labor arbitrage being one of the sort of fundamental advantages of offshoring. But I see, you know, certainly through the ZIRP era and really for the last two decades in Silicon Valley, it's awash with money. And Silicon Valley is very proud of being very capable, high producers. And often if you suggest to them, you know, you should come offshore, you can save money, it doesn't resonate, partly because they don't seem to need to save money, you know, because they're just sort of awash with cash most of the time. And also they don't feel that you need to work with the best of the best of the best. And that's why it's so sort of effective around Stanford and things like that. So do you get that? Now, obviously, you've worked for three massive logos, really significant companies in Silicon Valley, and it looks like all of them have adopted outsourcing. So am I getting the wrong end of the stick, or would you generally sort of feel the same, that a lot of Silicon Valley thinks that outsourcing is a little bit below them?
Yeah. So it's a great question. And I'd love to share some thoughts on this. So one is, I think a lot of companies out there actually think that the best companies don't outsource and are just wrong. And, you know, a lot of the best companies actually do outsource. You know, Stripe, like as you mentioned, Stripe, ClickUp, Zendesk, all of these companies have, you know, huge outsourcing arms. And in fact, all of them have been doing that since before the recent, you know, semi-recessionary environment that we've gotten into. Now, you know, I think a lot more companies are starting to wise up to it since we got into this era of no longer having growth at all costs instead of rather wanting that efficiency to be a part of the equation. In fact, probably a bigger part of the equation. And so, yeah, things are both changing. And I think folks are just starting to realize that it's a little bit of a myth that outsourcing means low quality. And I'll just add one more thing, which is, I think that comes from a history of outsourcing, right? Which is that, you know, when it started, and like no offense to these early outsourcers, but, you know, they were taking talent from countries that just hadn't been doing outsourcing yet. And maybe it was folks largely from India. I think that was one of the first, like, very popular places to do outsourcing from. And they hadn't developed technical skills yet. So they hadn't developed many English language skills yet. And that was just sort of the experience that folks were getting from outsourcing. It's like, okay, it's very, very cheap, but, you know, the quality is not necessarily there. And so there's like kind of a real warranted reputation that was there. Mm. And I think that is just like the reality is changing faster than the reputation in that regard. Plus, a lot of outsourcers still are old school and they are not actually finding the top talent, finding the great English speakers, you know, finding those who have really developed those technical skills, and then finding ways to deploy them very effectively and efficiently in their organizations.
It's very true, isn't it? There's a big hangover from the first iterations of outsourcing, you know, whether it was sort of 20, 30 years ago. I think it was a very unsophisticated industry and the professional capabilities were very, very limited. And like anything, though, when manufacturing started in China, when it started in Japan, it was all regarded as absolute junk and rubbish. And now, right, sort of, you know, whatever, 20, 30 years later, both Japan and China are out manufacturing the US. And so it's just incredible what can happen in 20 or 30 years. And that's certainly what has happened in the Philippines and India and other places. But it still does have that negative association and the hangover from the early days, which is really hard to shake. You know, you mentioned, of course, all of the companies you worked at, they have reached a certain point in maturity. And I think that they become a lot more, you know, they become run by the numbers a lot more, I think, don't they? Versus the kind of true startup, you know, seed A, B, C stages where they're still kind of burning and churning and, you know, doing all the crazy stuff. Do you see a lot of uptake from those companies, or are they just moving too fast and they want the best in the world and they're burning money? I suppose, you know, it's all changing now, isn't it? Now that funding rounds are dropping, but do you have any feedback from being on the ground in that kind of market space?
Yeah, you know, again, a great question. I think this is probably kind of the last shoe to drop, so to speak, because I think you're right. Some of the more mature organizations, you know, the bigger, more successful ones, kind of ironically are the ones who are outsourcing first because they have the internal process sophistication to be able to handle the outsourcing transition. Because it, you know, there's kind of like a cultural impact, there's an operational impact, you know, there's just a, you know, new set of disciplines and personnel and skills that need to come on board to really be effective in outsourcing. Even if you have a great outsourcing partner, which we aspire to be and believe we are, you still need to have some of those capabilities internally to be able to absorb that influx of new talents overseas. And so they're best prepared for it. And that actually allows them to just become even more efficient than their peers. They're already generally, you know, larger and more efficient than. But then you also find some kind of like scrappy folks at the very low end, new founders, small, very small businesses who are kind of in need of that boost to become more effective than each other and actually using it as a competitive advantage because they need to. And so we see a lot of those folks really starting to adopt, a lot of small business founders starting to get interested in outsourcing services and looking for things like ours as well that are lower friction, easier, remove distractions and errors much more quickly. I think the last shoe to drop is really those like younger, cutting edge tech firms that are still sort of telling themselves, no, we're a premium employer, we hire the best, we pay a lot, and we don't have really the time or operational, you know, maturity to be able to onboard a outsourcing operation. I think what they're realizing is the same thing as kind of the other folks, that actually with the right partner, it does not have to be that difficult to build an offshore operation. And there's a lot of different models, a lot of different partners, a lot of different models, and a lot of great talent out there. And so we are actually seeing, you know, quite a bit of demand start to pick up there, just lesser than the other groups.
Yeah. And also it's that perception that when you go offshoring, you do it for customer service or, you know, the, I don't know, like bookkeeping. But actually, as you say, it's the whole spectrum, isn't it? And you can get whatever, developers, designers, content writers, the whole piece, accountants, CFOs, if you need. So it is, it's kind of encouraging people to move up the skill ladder, I think, and not just limit this, not just limit the sort of staffing search to VAs and odd jobbers, basically. Yeah. But it's a slow process, isn't it, to shake off that kind of negative connotation with offshoring.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you mentioned that, actually, because that's one of the things I've been most passionate and excited about as we've been building out our offshore operations, both inside of these technology companies as well as with Catalyst BPX. I think there's this misconception, and we're actually writing an article about the many myths of offshoring. I think one of them is that you can't really hire deep technical skills and you can't really hire managerial skills. I think both of those things are very untrue. And again, yeah, historically, maybe that was the case. Yeah, maybe you couldn't find top talents to a high breadth, a high level, or a deep depth. I think now you can find exceptional talent that hits all of those things, including, you know, like I have great folks on board at Catalyst at the COO and CFO level. And I think they're fully qualified to be COOs and CFOs of small businesses, medium-sized businesses in the United States. And so they're able to also attract directors, senior directors, managers who are of that caliber in the Philippines, and, you know, just build out teams that really operate. You know, you hardly imagine that these folks are in the Philippines versus operating at like a cutting-edge technology company in the United States.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you know, and it's hard to push against it, but I think there's like this myopic view that the Philippines is just this land of VAs and people sitting at home doing gig work on Upwork, and they don't realize that actually, you know, it's a significant economy over here, and JP Morgan is here, and Google's here, and Facebook's here, and Nestle's here, and Citigroup is here, and, you know, all McKinsey's here. You've got management consultants, you've got MBAs here, you've got Harvard graduates here. And it's sort of broadening that horizon to say that actually there's very sophisticated industry here. And of course, you need very capable staff to drive those industries, and they're about, you know, but unfortunately, I think a lot of people go looking for VAs. So then all they see is VAs. And a lot of people think that you hire people online and they work from home, and you don't get the professional set doing that. You know, the professional set are building careers and working in proper shiny buildings with benefits, you know, so it's just sort of opening their eyes up to the true potential. And that top 5% or 10% or 1%, as you say, which is now becoming a pretty ubiquitous tagline.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I think it's true. I mean, a lot of folks think, you know, oh, I paid someone $3 an hour to do virtual assistant services for me, and the outcome was not as robust as I would like. And yeah, the answer is, yeah, like the really great virtual assistants, personal assistants, they're now executive administrators for the CEO of JP Morgan from the, you know, JP Morgan Philippines office, right? And they're getting paid probably like, you know, decent, right? Like maybe even $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year if we're talking about all the different types of compensation and benefits that they're receiving. And so that's still a great deal. That person is probably making a couple $100,000 in the US, but you have to understand that it's not a 10-to-1 ratio efficiency, right? If you want someone who's really a rock star, the most efficient, most effective folks that are really going to up the bar in your company versus just maybe save a few dollars but make a few mistakes, you do, you know, you have to look at the high end, and you're going to have to pay a little bit for the high end too, and just so, you know, understand what that means.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think because people sort of write into us and they say, how much is a salesperson? And that question alone is really difficult, because in the US you have a salesperson for $40,000 a year, and you also have one for $400,000 and one for $4 million per year. And they're all salespeople, but, you know, there's obviously a big variation in terms of the value that they build. So, you know, but it's just trying to get that. People think, because everything is so simple now, and people just want one answer, you know, how much is a salesperson? It's $8 an hour, sir.
but it's not, you know, it's complicated because it's kind of like, you know, like, and then if you do get a salesperson, it's not like you just press the button and they go, because they are humans. They need onboarding. They need good processes to work with. They need a good product to sell and a good environment to sell to. So, you know, it's very, very complicated, isn't it? Because it's this thing, it's a complex system as opposed to just buying a product off the shelf.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things that, like, we really as a business almost are grappling with and trying to change. And we actually write that in some of our messaging, that, you know, it's about like creating this sort of new type of BPO experience that changes the narrative a little bit. And I think there's other companies trying to do this, to be fair, but, you know, maybe not many. And really, like, educating folks that there are those, you know, the types of sales reps that get paid $1,000 in the U.S. or $4 million in the U.S. Like, you technically, those people are in the Philippines. They may not be in as high of a volume, you know, as they are in the U.S., just because the country is still developing and skill sets a little bit. But you can find those folks. Maybe they're the 0.1%, the 0.01%. But then they're not going to cost $400K or $4 million. They're not going to cost $3 an hour either. You know, they're going to cost, you know, probably 60, 70, 80K, something like that. But you're still getting the ROI improvements. And I think that's really where, like, the next frontier and the magic of outsourcing in the future is coming in. And that's where folks like the ones at Stripe or Zendesk or ClickUp, you know, they're looking for that type of talent. They're not going against the, you know, we're premium employers and we pay top dollar mantra. They're still living that. They're just doing that within each country that they operate in, and trying to move a higher percentage of their overall labor force into these lower cost countries to the top talent in those countries.
Yeah, no, makes sense. So I want to talk then, obviously we're here to talk about Catalyst BPX, and coming from a Silicon Valley background, you are an investor, you have a lot going on. Why did you choose to settle on Catalyst as being one of your primary investments and activities when, of course, there's a whole spectrum of things you could be doing? What is the opportunity? But more specifically, what is your thesis regarding Catalyst BPX in terms of what are you doing differently? And you touched on it previously, but what is the core to that thesis of what you're doing different and how you're going to disrupt the market?
Yeah, so Catalyst BPX, it's two things I would say. One is a practical element and one is a personal element for me. So touching first just on the second, it's something that I actually have always loved, working with folks from other cultures and building relationships and bring people together as like a team manager, a team leader, more recent years, like a senior executive. I've had this opportunity to hire people and build great teams. I've always been obsessed with quality. And so having this opportunity to build teams of people and bring people together around the world and also have it all be focused on quality is just personally like very exciting for me, and something that I am, you know, quite happy to be building something around. And then if we think about the more practical and professional elements of it, I think there's a great financial opportunity there. And yeah, it's some of the things that we've touched on, but I think if we can change the model to something that people are more easily able to engage with, versus having folks feel like, oh, you know, I would outsource. Sounds like it's efficient, but it's just so much work. It's this huge distraction. I got to go find a decent partner. I've got to go make sure that they actually hire decent talent. I've got to build processes for them because they're not going to be able to do it autonomously. You know, if none of those things were true and it was, you know, I know exactly who to go to, it's Catalyst BPX. And I know it's going to be an easy, fast setup process. They're going to do most of it for me, and they're going to give me high ROI resources. And they're also going to generally do all the training and management of those resources. Then everybody would be doing it. You know, if you can make that all true, everybody would immediately be outsourcing pretty much. And that's our mission. I think that there is an opportunity to get close to that vision. And I don't think it's been realized by anybody else in the market so far, because, it's a little bit hard, right? There's a lot of things that are difficult in that. And two, it requires some of the skill sets and capabilities that you learn in top-tier technology companies. And most folks coming out of top-tier technology companies are going off and, you know, founding other top-tier technology companies. They, you know, just haven't, you know, had the same passion to go, like, revolutionize the BPO industry. So we believe there's an opportunity there, and yeah, we're excited to tackle it.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? So I've been building the sales engine for outsourcing for the last 6-7 years. And when I started this company, again, I wasn't new to building companies. And I thought I knew the value proposition of outsourcing. And I thought this would just be so simple to sell because it's just such an obvious value proposition. But it's really, really hard. And people aren't necessarily open to outsourcing. But as you say, there's a lot of friction between even giving it a go and getting started. Because if people say yes, then that's only the beginning of the actual journey of building a successful team. And you've got to go through the recruitment process. That takes a lot of time. Recruitment in itself is a specialism where there's thousands of business books on how to properly recruit and onboard people. Then there's onboarding, then there's training. And you can be sort of weeks into the process before someone even sits down into the chair. And then maybe another 1 or 2 or 3 months further into the process before that person is fully trained and up to speed. And then, you know, providing value. So it's a really, really difficult on-ramp. But I wonder if there's really any other way. You know, in today's world, not wanting to get too philosophical, but everyone wants the sort of easy drug that just sort of cures all of our problems without actually doing any of the hard work. I do wonder, you know, fundamentally what we are talking about is employment of humans. And it's been done this way since we've been industrialized. And I do wonder, you know, because if you just sort of press a button and someone's there, like, how are they onboarded? How are they trained? Will that person feel an affiliation for your company? Is there going to be any culture? Is there going to be any sort of affiliation? How do they learn all of the background? So you maybe need to go through all of these painful steps in order to have a workforce, or certainly a person that is valuable to the company. Have you thought about that sort of life cycle of onboarding?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a very good point, first of all. And I want to recognize that, again, it's not easy. And I suspect no company will ever make it a fully seamless process to, hey, you sign up on the internet with an excellent BPO partner, and in a few days, you've got this expert resource that's fully onboarded to your company and culture, who's just executing things without you needing to manage them, right? That's the holy grail. That is probably not quite what any company will ever fully achieve because of the many realities of the hiring process, the training and onboarding process, and the need to build some of that cultural cohesion, actually, to have the most effective relationship with some of your offshore resources. And so what we're trying to do is probably just somewhere in between, in that we believe there is an opportunity to do a lot of those things better. I won't name names, but we worked with a few providers, talent sourcing services, just a number of companies in the industry, many small, many large, and invariably, the experience we've had falls way short of what we have built and experienced inside of some of these leading technology companies. And a lot of it just comes down to, you know, it's the hiring process, it's the quality of the talent, it's the mindset and the ability of the leadership to build some of that cultural integration and drive those conversations proactively. And so while we don't think we can have the cure-all per se, I think that we can, if we can build the right types of teams and the right types of processes, at least lower the activation energy and the sort of barrier to entry of having a business process outsourcing relationship to a much more desirable point versus where it typically is today.
It's fascinating. You know, over the years, I've seen people try it. There's obviously Amazon Turk, which is really kind of a significant operation where the concept is it's piecemeal work and you can just sort of sign up and it's effectively productizing people's time. You know, and again, that's never really taken off. There was, of course, Magic, which was a Silicon Valley startup, which really caught the attention of Silicon Valley for a while there. And that, I think, was something like $1 a minute or something, you know, and that was kind of services on request. And there's been another couple of BPOs I know in the Philippines that have kind of explored really productizing staffing, but it's difficult. You know, Magic, for example, has pretty much turned now to a traditional outsourcing model and pretty much burned all of the sort of seed investing that they got trying to build this new model. It's interesting. You know, I think that inevitably it should happen, except for the fact that we're dealing with humans, you know, and if it wasn't the fact that we're dealing with humans on both sides of the thing, you know, the clients are humans, but then also the staff are humans, that it just gets all messy and complicated. So it's fascinating to see. But I definitely agree with you in terms of there's this painful, painful onboarding process that can take many weeks. And actually, it's not that painful, but it's akin to hiring staff and building a team. But a lot of people don't want to deal with that or to know the reality of that. They actually want to sort of overlook that. They want to pay for a service and get things done. So it's fascinating.
Right. Yeah. And I think part of it also comes down to client qualification, because to that last point, you do end up with some folks who are looking more for that Upwork engagement versus an actual BPO relationship. When they come in saying, hey, I just need someone to go do this work and I want them part-time. I'm not sure if I need them for a long time. I usually say there's some fantastic people on Upwork. I recommend you check it out versus saying, okay, let's work together and let's build some kind of a unified team on the offshore side that integrates with your current team, which is what we generally aspire to do for most of our customers. And I do, again, definitely recognize the challenges of working with people. And I think that there's also just this ability, because we are working with people, to create something that is better than the average, right? Like if you look around the industry, you can always find that example of some company. Maybe right now it's the FANG, and Stripe is sort of up there actually in that, you know, top echelon of technology companies that are known, like, yeah, they pay a lot more too, but they also just employ some of the best and brightest in the entire world. And typically, if you look at a lot of the processes they execute, they tend to be exceptionally well refined. You know, they've really documented and nailed down things like the hiring process, the onboarding process, and the education process, ongoing education process for folks who are on board. And so finding just some of those ways to bring some of that magic of technology and take the BPO model a little bit out of the dark ages, I think at least brings us closer to that holy grail state that we're looking for. So yeah, excited to continue to explore it. And we've seen some good uptake with initial clients. But then the other question is like, how much does that scale, right? I think you can definitely bring on exceptional talent and build world-class processes when you've got all the focus in the world. And we'll need to continue to monitor as we continue to rapidly grow. Are we able to maintain that talent bar and able to maintain that focus?
Yeah, it's a really interesting thesis. And it's one that I'm avidly watching. So of course, we're kind of the sales engine for the outsourcing industry. And so anything that improves that onboarding process is like gold. And I think the sooner that you can bring the point of gratification closer to the point where they sign on, then it's a no-brainer. But it is interesting. I just sort of feel as humans and humanity, like in some respects, it's advancing so quickly. And of course, we've got AI and electric cars. But, you know, for example, we're dealing with a publicly listed American company. They're about 40 years old and they just have deplorable sort of invoicing issues. Now, you know, that's kind of acceptable, but invoicing has been happening for hundreds of years. It's nothing new. And this company itself is about 40 years old. So you think you kind of get beyond problems, but it's not true. You know, the sort of sometimes the most basic things are the most, you know, they persevere and they become the biggest issues. So yeah, I would have thought after kind of a couple of hundred years of business, any kind of invoicing issue would be sorted out, but these things persist.
Yes, inevitably there are those business challenges that are more difficult to solve. I think that actually kind of takes us to another interesting topic that actually I'd love to get your thoughts on as well, which is the intersection of AI with business process outsourcing. Because I think for the history of business and technology, there's been these sort of insurmountable challenges. And some of them we've started to surmount, even if they seem very difficult. Like, you know, some companies still fail with billing practices or other things, but there is some great software getting developed out there. And you see some folks running pretty clean and smooth operations. I think similarly, there used to be things like, or I should say there still are things like customer support that you just assume, okay, every company in the world is going to throw hundreds of people at customer support because it just is a people intensive thing. You're talking to customers and you need to have the right kinds of conversations, high quality, have someone available, timely, all of those things. And so that's going to be an industry. And people have obviously been trying to innovate against that for as long as anyone can probably remember. We've created things like help centers and communities and social media that can serve as a resource as well. And of course, Google can answer a lot of questions. Like, there's a lot of things you can do to try to get ahead of that and reduce the amount of investment that you need in customer support. But no one's really stopped having customer support, as far as I'm aware, at least not many successful companies. And so, you know, there's this new era coming where we kind of have to see, like, will AI start to really transform some of these things? And I don't like to scare people with this kind of stuff, because I believe everyone's still going to have the opportunity to have a job, but your job might change, you know. It seems like outsourcers, in order to stay ahead with AI becoming a bigger thing, are going to have to learn to build teams that harness AI to solve problems versus try to solve problems so well that AI doesn't overtake them, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's a big delineation there, because, you know, whenever I say I'm in outsourcing, people sort of and say, you know, AI is going to kill it. Yeah. And it's a very sort of black and white view. I believe that the high repetition tasks that are done in these massive call centers are at risk. You know, anything that is sort of fairly repetitive and simple in nature, that will eventually be automated away. But the real sort of outsourcing, that what I call next gen outsourcing, and what I believe you are focusing on as well, is really staff augmentation, you know, and that's people working shoulder to shoulder with other people in other countries, just doing standard work. And it's going to be a long, long time before that will be automated away. Now, can it be? Yes. But will it? I believe it will be automated away at the same pace as every other job in the rest of the world. So it's not really an issue isolated to outsourcing. It's, you know, if all of employment is going to be undermined by AI, then actually it's a far bigger conversation, you know, that the world needs to have in terms of, you know, what are we doing in terms of universal basic income or something like that to keep people fed. But it's certainly, I don't think, anything isolated to the outsourcing industry. But are you, you know, and that's interesting as well, you're coming from Silicon Valley and you're getting into outsourcing, so obviously you think that there is considerable durability to the model, yeah, and not threatened by AI.
Yeah, I do. And actually, I think you hit the nail on the head there, which is, as you look at that, you know, top 1%, top 5% of the labor force in countries like the Philippines, where we're focused, you are looking at folks who are, you know, shoulder to shoulder with some of the best in countries like the United States or the United Kingdom. And so I agree completely. If you're hiring those folks into your organization, you're not going to see their jobs removed any faster than you're going to see jobs removed in higher cost countries. And in fact, I mean, typically you're going to see them removed slower, because you're going to still have that ROI advantage. You're going to try to reduce costs in the most expensive areas. I actually think in many of the companies that I've been in anyways, a lot of the AI efforts have focused a little bit less on the shift of folks out of the organization and trying to replace jobs, and just much more on like product capabilities that are going to make people want to use products more, partially because if you have a highly efficient customer support organization and you're employing them offshore, it's actually not a huge cost center within the company anymore. I mean, many of these companies' customer support team, despite being a relatively large amount of headcount, is only 2 or 3% of the total revenue. So it's not actually destroying the P&L to have those folks on board. Of course, if you can make that 0%, yeah, there'd be some savings there. But again, I think you're still going to need someone there for escalations. You're still going to need management. You need someone to watch and train the AI. You need people to build the knowledge centers. And so those are, again, all of those jobs that are actually shoulder to shoulder with the United States or UK or other, you know, higher cost countries, and will continue to likely thrive in countries like the Philippines. So that's where we're focused as well. And I do think that'll be a very durable set of skills.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And even with customer service that you mentioned, I do think that the basic tickets should be removed with AI, with automation, but also with improving product and processes, so that actually these things don't get raised or don't become issues. But I think there's always going to be issues somehow. Again, I think it just comes back to that humanity thing that we can't really avoid, because, you know, it's kind of funny, like airplanes don't really crash anymore. You know, they did in the first 10, 20 years, but they eradicated that stuff. Cars don't break down anymore because they've built better systems. Yet, you know, customer service tickets are probably higher than ever. And it's like, why can't we build better systems so that everyone is happy? But it doesn't seem to be the case. It seems that whatever we're building, we're also sort of destroying and disrupting at the same time. So you're always going to get that engagement. And AI will be able to sort out the simpler ones, but then there's going to be increasing numbers of escalations for more complex stuff. And it just sort of carries on. But it'll be I don't know. It's crazy. It's crazy to see.
Yeah. Just to chime in on that. So when I was at ClickUp, ClickUp is a Very innovative company, a very fast moving company, still very much in that like startup hyper growth phase. And being at the intersection of all the customer experience teams, go to market teams, and product teams, I had this interesting opportunity to really oversee and be an integral part of that conversation around, well, what are we prioritizing? Are we prioritizing fixing bugs? Are we prioritizing making this product not need customer support because it's, you know, such a clean to use experience? Or are we going to innovate and then, you know, invest our engineering resources on building AI type capabilities that are just fun to use for the customer or make them more productive versus stomping out some of those bugs and reliability issues? And I would say 9 times out of 10, like, yeah, we started to double down on reliability, but 9 times out of 10, we said it's more important to innovate. We got to stay ahead. And so I think the natural instinct in the industry is actually to focus more on building new things versus repairing the foundation. And inevitably, you know, you're going to have all of those teams of varying levels of capability, onshore, offshore, but in many cases offshore, that are going to be able to help with maintaining that, you know, sometimes still shaky foundation of all of these developing businesses. I imagine that will continue to be the practice for a long time. The other thing I wanted to add is, of course, there's customer supports. I mean, we've talked a lot about that, but there's also so many other teams that people hire up in the Philippines. A lot of these finance and accounting roles, or even many software engineers these days are starting to pop up in the Philippines, as you mentioned, designers. And so a lot of these folks, they'll start to use AI more as tools, and it'll become increasingly prevalent that AI does part of the job. But I do think they're going to just harness the value of AI to do their jobs better versus being replaced by it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's fascinating, isn't it? And, you know, you already see it, but actually we don't consider, like, forget AI, just automation. Like, automation saves all of us kind of 5 extra seconds here or there, or probably 5%, 10% of our productivity just by having Gmail do certain things and having a calendar do certain things. And everyone's using that. So everyone has advanced by 5 or 10% in terms of productivity, but then that space is still filled by other activities, isn't it? So the engine just keeps speeding up, I suppose. But anyway, let's get back to Catalyst. It is, so what are you focusing on? What's your ideal client? You kind of zooming in on the Silicon Valley environment, like catering for them, or what are you focusing on?
Yeah, you know, because our backgrounds are so deep in Silicon Valley, that's definitely been a core focus for us. We believe that we have the most to offer those businesses just from knowing their practices, knowing their cultures, knowing their products inside and out. Big advantages for them and for us. But we have actually been branching out quite a bit to a lot of other business models, particularly things like e-commerce, telecoms, and then some of the companies that are sort of going through digital transformation, I think, are also finding a big use for our services, because if we talk to technology companies, we're like speaking the same language. We're already thinking the same, and there's a lot of value in that familiarity. We're kind of operating at their level, so to speak. But if we talk to some of these other companies that are a little bit lower, or like I should say earlier in sort of the maturity curve, and still developing good processes, understanding what good looks like, they benefit a lot from our services too, because we're not just bringing, again, talent in the Philippines, like, hey, we'll go hire you somebody. We are actually bringing also some of the practices of some of these leading technology companies that we've worked for. You know, having been on the go-to-market side, the finance and accounting side, the operations side, and some of these companies like Zendesk, Stripe, or ClickUp, I'm actually able to help advise not only my leaders, but also the customers of Catalyst on the way that we would do, for example, like prospecting, or the way that we do customer support and some of the tactics that we had there that allowed us to achieve better efficiency, better employee retention, better cultural experiences. A lot of things that tech companies have kind of figured out with all of the resources and funding and great talent that they have, that I think your average BPO just haven't really seen. They might have experienced it from some clients, but they're probably not absorbing the true best practices from that end. And they certainly, you know, haven't just figured out on their own, because it's not sort of natural for the BPO business to be able to build for themselves the best processes in the world. They, you know, kind of need to learn it from some folks who've really focused on that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, that's the value, isn't it? You know, and certainly the value compared to hiring someone off Upwork. With Catalyst, you get the entire sort of executive team overseeing the account. And of course, you can tap into the experience and project management of that team. So there's so much more value than just hiring the individual. Yeah, it's a complete package. Yeah. And do you focus on specific roles? Do you have a niche yet? Obviously, you're pretty deep into finances. Like, you do a lot of accounting, or you're just kind of across the board at the moment?
Yeah, we're spread pretty wide, pretty broad set of offerings that we've put together. And I would say if I had to say where we focus, it would be on the sales side, finance and accounting side, and the customer experience side. And I say customer experience, and I actually mean it, unlike I think, honestly, a lot of the BPOs out there. It's not just call centers and customer support, but also I'm particularly passionate about what we call customer success. And I don't know if that's a particularly broadly used term, but it certainly is in SaaS software and in leading tech companies where we've spent a lot of time. And it's really this idea that you shouldn't just be reactive to your clients' needs. You should also be proactive. And you know, there's some really great talent in the Philippines who can reach out to struggling accounts if you see the right kind of data indicators or if they're at a certain point in their onboarding as a customer to just try to help them understand how to use the product better and really thrive. We see that this drives up net expansion rates of customers quite a lot. You also have the types of folks who are the point person, basically the account manager for some of the larger accounts for some of the businesses we support. So these are maybe $100,000 ARR deployments of a piece of software at a technology company. The rep who actually is the point of contact for the business with that company, along with a few other companies in the customer base of that business, is, you know, it's very easy to employ that role in the Philippines. And that role is actually a little bit underutilized and something we really like to share with folks as a great option for staffing in the Philippines. And we, you know, we do a little bit of marketing. We do a little bit of other back office things like virtual assistants. Executive administrators are something that we specialize in a little bit, just again, because we've seen these really sophisticated executive administration kind of routines, skill sets and capabilities in certain folks. And I think people are kind of thinking of a virtual assistant who, you know, can maybe handle some minor tasks, but isn't going to be able to really help you run your Gmail accounts and calendar in a sophisticated way. So we like to introduce folks to that capability and some of that talent, which absolutely exists in the Philippines. So pretty broad, but with a few, you know, maybe focus areas that are based on where we see the greatest needs and where we feel we have the greatest competitive advantage and ability to introduce new types of talent to the market.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You know, one thing I don't see over here much in the Philippines yet is product managers. And Silicon Valley is awash with product managers in terms of technical build outs and building the product as a technical product. And it hasn't really sort of hit home yet in the Philippines. And we're essentially a tech company. And it's really difficult to find that. But I don't doubt that in another sort of 5 years or so, you're going to have pretty good depth in that. But do you have any experience in that? I mean, it's a major, major role in Silicon Valley, isn't it? To have all your product managers managing different aspects of the product.
Yeah. It's a great point. And yeah, it's funny. You know, I didn't mention engineering or product management in our lineup. And that's because I see those as emerging skill sets in the Philippines. I see at least engineering emerging. I think to your point, product management is not something I've really seen here. And it's an interesting question. Like, why wouldn't that be a common thing in the Philippines when you have creatives doing marketing and graphic design? You have highly technical folks doing things like accounting. You know, why can't you kind of bring those things together and have folks who are really passionate and capable on the product side? My thesis on this is that there just haven't been enough companies going and developing those skill sets in the Philippines for people to feel like it's an industry that they should focus on and really understand. Mm-hmm. I also think there might be kind of like a natural bias with things like customer support and finance and accounting that are so technical. And then, of course, you have a few people who just grew up coloring and drawing and like they've got the creative side. There hasn't really been that tee up, that jumping off point for, you know, folks to really go down that product management path. So I think it just hasn't kind of organically evolved, but it is remarkable, to your point, how rare, honestly, those roles are in the Philippines. And maybe that's something to explore in the future as something to build or kind of farm. That's the kind of thing you'd have to build probably an education system around and really train up talent to do that.
Yeah, that could be a good little niche, actually, because it's just becoming, it's one of the core jobs now, isn't it? You don't have any teams in Silicon Valley, it seems, unless they're sort of run by a product manager. But fascinating. Absolutely. Yeah, but it's relatively recent profession, isn't it? It's only really been around kind of 5 to 10 years, I suppose. But
yeah. That, I think part of that is also that now there's so many more technology companies that are utilizing those skill sets, and technology has started to become such a big part of the global economy that it is becoming a common role. But it's still, you know, the types of companies that really, you know, use product managers in a sophisticated way, I think it's still probably like deeply in the minority, maybe not in like Silicon Valley. I think in Silicon Valley, it's like possibly the majority. But, you know, in your average country in the world and just, you know, generally around the world, even in like less developed parts of the US, I think you're you know, not going to very often find a standard kind of product manager role. And so maybe it's just that it has not reached quite that volume to where people would say, okay, let's offshore this, especially because it tends to be one of the most strategic and important roles in the company. And that can be a little bit more difficult to train up offshore.
Yeah, no, I agree. Alex, thank you so much. So fantastic talking about outsourcing from your perspective and your origins and just getting a different view. And of course, exciting journey ahead for Catalyst BPX. If anyone wants to learn more or reach out, how can they do that?
Yeah, I think the best place to go is www.catalystbpx.com. You can also feel free to reach out to me directly, alex@catalystbpx.com. Very happy to chat. I would love to connect. And yeah, thank you, Derek.
That was Alex Small. He is the founder and lead investor of Catalyst BPX. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And as always, if you want to send us a question, send us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.